Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gubertie.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gubertie, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I'm very excited about this show. We are going to discuss how to write your first book with Chandler Bolt. Chandler is a five-time best-selling author and the CEO of Self-Publishing School. Chandler's goal is to help you find the book that has been lurking inside of you for all of these years. Yes, it's there, and Chandler is going to show you how to find it. And now it is my pleasure to welcome him to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here.
It's great to have you on the show, and I was really attracted by your story. I mean, before you wrote books, you were a C-minus student, and someone looking at your transcript and basically giving you career advice would have discouraged you from writing a book based on the traditional system. But you decided to write books anyway. What inspired you to become an author?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, as you mentioned, you know, I'm a college dropout, I'm a C-level English student, and so if you would have told me a few years ago that I'd have six published books at this point in time, I would have told you you're crazy, and that doesn't sound like fun. So I tripped and fell into this whole thing, and it really started with, I felt like I had information to share. I feel like a lot of people do, where you feel like you have this knowledge that you've learned, and you see people around you. In my case, it was some friends where I said, man, if I could just teach them these couple things, I think it would really help them. And I think it would really help them to start their business, which was the kind of the topic that I was writing on. And so I decided to go ahead and write my first book, which was The Productive Person, which is kind of all about how to run a business and be productive in the process, which is kind of what I learned how to do the hard way from running my first business and hitting six figures in college. And it's what I felt like my friends could use some help. And so I really just wrote it as a PDF for them and then ended up turning that book that PDF into a book on Amazon.
So you find this inspiration to write books, and now you have several best-selling books under your belt, and then you decide to launch Self-Publishing School for aspiring self-published authors. Why did you create that program? What was the inspiration behind that?
Yeah, so I'm not one of those people who just set out to say, oh, I'm going to write books so then I can have people pay me to teach them how to do it. You know, it was never a master plan or anything like that. It's just my first book, it took off, it was successful, it made close to $7,000 within the first month, then continued to make thousands and thousands of dollars every single month. So, when that happened to me, I said, this is passive income. This is that thing that I didn't think it's possible, but I guess it is possible, right? And so I started, making mailbox money, as they would say, and the money just kept showing up, and it's what kept my head above water and paid the bills when I dropped out of school. And I was working on a business at the time, and it was struggling. It was failing. And people just kept asking me about this whole book thing. They're like, Chandler, how are you doing all these books? Because I did a second book, and then I helped a friend do his book. And people just kept asking about it. They kept saying, hey, can you teach me? Or, hey, can you just get on a call with me and tell me how to do this? So I'd get on a call with them for an hour. I'd tell them everything that I know. And then I'd get off the call. I'd hang up. Just for free, just to be a nice person. And eventually, so many people kept asking about it. I was like, you know what? I think I can sell this. And so we launched the first version of Self-Publishing School. It was called Best-Selling Book System. We tested it out. We got 44 people to enroll. We had a massive success rate with that first class of students. And that showed me that, hey, this principle, not only can I do it successfully, but now I can replicate that in others. I can teach it successfully. So now I'm going to be able to scale this thing. So once we had that early success, we kind of just went off for the races and said, all right, it's time to scale this.
You mentioned the high success rate of Self-Publishing School, and I'm not surprised by that high success rate because I actually went through it myself and I learned a lot of great insights. And you mentioned the success stories. I actually had Lise Cartwright. She's someone who I had on episode 10 of this podcast.
Yeah.
She made $3,000 to $4,000 per month within 6 months as a Kindle author. And she mentioned Self-Publishing School and your insights as a big part of her success. So what do you think makes self-publishing school work so well for aspiring and experienced authors like Lise Cartwright?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Lise is great. She was one of our early students. And she actually ended up becoming a coach at self-publishing school for a while. And she's just an all-around great human being and just so cool to see all of her success. I mean, she's living the dream, and it's just so cool to see. I mean, she's such an implementer. So, you know, I see people like that, and it's like just so cool to see them succeed. And that's why I do what I do here. And the reason I think the program is so successful is because we build up accountability and coaching inside the program. I think a lot of people, they end up purchasing a program like this. It improves their shelf esteem, right? They put it on the shelf,
yeah.
And then they start to feel good about themselves, but they don't actually do anything with it. So we really encourage accountability. We encourage action. And we provide coaching. So it's not, we're not just saying, hey, here's a login, here's online training, good luck. You know, we prioritize our student success over our financial gain. So, you know, sometimes we know that if we push people and make them uncomfortable, they're more likely to refund. And that's okay. Because if pushing people makes them more likely to be successful in the program, then we're going to push them. We're going to hold them accountable, and we're going to make sure that they're successful.
To achieve any type of success, you really have to push yourself beyond measure in comparison to how you've been pushing yourself already. And I know that all authors, regardless of how successful they are, have high points and low points. And it's easy to listen to Chandler right now and think, wow, he's so successful. But as you and I know, and listeners know as well, whether we want to admit it or not, it took you some time to reach that success, and you had to go on a journey much like the ones that authors are going on. So I like to ask people on my show what their low point is on their journey to serve as inspiration for people who are in the middle of that journey. So what is the one low point that you squared off against during your journey as an author, and how did you overcome it?
That's a great question. To be frank, there's so many low points. Like, it's hard to pick one because it really is a roller coaster ride. I mean, ever since I dropped out of school, it was about a year to a year and a half of just really tough times, failing again. But I'll tell you, the one lowest of the low point was about, I want to say, 10 months after I dropped out of school. And I was on a cruise with the company that I used to work for. And we were on the cruise, and it was the last night of the cruise, and we were up on the top of this mast, the very high point of the ship. It's something that we did every single year. And I was talking, there was five of us up there, and I was looking to my right, and I was talking with my friends, and I heard this noise. I turned to my left, and I saw this propeller spinning. It's like the sonar thing on top of the ship. And I saw it spinning, and right as I saw it spinning, I saw it, boom, hit my buddy Kendall in the chest. And it hit him in the chest, and it swept him over the railing, and he fell two stories onto the deck of the cruise ship, he fell on his head. And it was about that time that I looked down, and he wasn't moving. I thought he would be, but he wasn't. And then my buddy Christian, he yelled out, "Hey, somebody get some help." And that's when I knew it was really serious. So I scaled down the railing. I go down there to get with Kendall, and I'm just trying to get him coherent. He's still unconscious, trying to get him, you know, to wake up. And I just try, and he's still unconscious. And finally, we get the paramedics there. They take him down to the bottom of the ship. They rush the ship into port, and they rush us into port, and then they rush him off the ship. They rush him off the ship, and on the way to the hospital, he passes away. Now, Kendall was 20 years old. And he was a good friend of mine. And when you talk about the toughest point in my life or in this journey, you know, I'd been failing for 10 straight months. And then to have someone, a friend of mine, you know, pass away right in front of me, I'd never had that happen before, and I didn't really know what to do. And so I remember a week or two later talking with his dad and, you know, just saying, he said, we were just talking. He said, you know, Kendall, he was my only son. He was a family name. I'm old. I can't have more kids. And he said, the only good that can come out of this is if other people's lives are positively impacted by this. And that really just kind of hit me in the chest and lit a fire under me to make sure that I do more good in the world. It made me ask some hard questions. One is, the first question was, if I were to die tomorrow, would I be happy with the life that I live? And the sad answer was no. And the second question that I asked was, well, what am I doing about it? What am I doing to make the world a better place? And that's when I realized that, you know, the work that I was doing with self-publishing school, it was genuinely making a difference for a lot of people, Kindle included. I actually found out a couple weeks later that he had written a book by attending one of my random webinars. And you know, we were able to publish that with the help of his friends after he passed away. So kind of his legacy lived on. So for me, that was the hardest part and has been and probably will forever be the hardest part of my journey. But really just woke me up and said, hey, you know, I need to make him proud and I need to get more serious with what I'm doing here because I can really make a difference with this.
So how exactly did you deal with that? Like, I know that taking action and like changing the direction of your life was a big part of it. Was there anything else you did to help you through that hard time?
Oh, for sure. I mean, tons. I went to counseling. That really helped. One of my buddies, Christian, that was up there, we became accountability partners, and we still talk every single month to kind of talk through goals. So what are our goals for last month? What are our goals for this month? How did we do on our goals for last month? That sort of thing. It lit a fire under both of us. And it's, you know, a little over 2 years later, and we're still doing that. So that really helped. You know, I had a really good support system with my family, with my friends, and that sort of thing. And so you just have to dig deep. At least that's what it was for me. So counseling helped. Having accountability, having support helped, and then also just digging deep and saying, hey, you know, either I can let this derail me or this can define me, and this can make, you know, this is kind of like the divergence in the road, and I can choose one path or the other. One path is of self-pity and things like that, and or the other path is really just pushing through this and doing things that I know he would want me to do and making him proud. And so that I kind of used it as fuel to just kind of really push, because I feel like, you know, Kendall told me the night before he passed away that he was telling me about his 5-year goals. And I just had this realization that he'll never get to achieve any of those goals. And now it's up to me to not only live for myself, and I already had big dreams and goals, but to live for him too, and to make him proud and to kind of, like his dad said, make something good come out of this so that other people's lives are positively impacted. So I kind of feel like that was a crystallization that's the mandate on my life. And I have certain gifts and talents and abilities that if I don't use them, I'm going to get to the end of my life and I'm going to really regret it.
It's amazing hearing your story. I was thinking about how authors, and not just authors, but people in general, they'll make excuses about why they can't pursue their goals, and they'll constantly say how they're too busy, and for some reason they like being too busy gives them a reason to say, okay, this is why I can't accomplish my dream. But you seem like a busy person on paper who not only writes books but also crushes it. I read the Business Insider article which details how you were a sophomore at the College of Charleston juggling classes, an internship, and the entrepreneurial bug. And with this seemingly busy schedule, you managed to become a really successful entrepreneur. So how did you write books even when on the surface, it seemed like you were too busy to write the content for your books?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just discipline, you know, discipline, cutting off distractions, and then having help, knowing what you're good at, you know. My early books, I had to write those exclusively. And then as I got better and kind of more prolific with creating content, I was able to build up a team around me, because I know that I'm not a good zero to draft person. I'm a much better molder and an editor. So as things went along, I'm able to play to my strengths and build up people on my team that can help get those first drafts finished, so I can give them content. I can give them videos, PDFs, audio recordings, everything like that. And I had you know, someone on my team who really helped, and then I could really get in there and mold that draft to make it good, to make it really good, right? But I could set the direction for forming that first draft. You know, we'd come together, we'd create a table of contents, and she'd be able to go in and kind of start to mold the clay and get the rough draft in there. So those are a few of the things. I mean, when I need to write, I buckle down. I cut off all distractions. I don't mess around, and I use Parkinson's law to make sure that I set somewhat unrealistic timelines so that I'm just really focused. And I push myself in that way. And then I also have help and just build up a team of people around me that are good at things that I'm not good at.
Can you explain Parkinson's law a little bit to the listeners who don't know what that is?
Yeah. Great catch there, Mark. So Parkinson's law it states that an object will swell in proportion to the amount of time or space that you give yourself to complete it. So, for example, you know, Americans spend 3% more than they earn. That's Parkinson's law. You earn more and then you're going to spend more. It's just going to fill the container that you have. Now, just go back to the school days. If you have a paper or a test, what happens? You cram at the last minute to finish that paper or to study for that test. So the basic premise there is that when you push out these long deadlines, it's all just going to get done at the end anyway. So Parkinson's law just says, hey, if you shorten that time frame, usually you can still get the same amount of work done. You'll just get it done in a much faster time.
I do see that analogy because I'm still in college right now. So the deadline thing, that definitely still applies. And so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've had many an all-nighter, especially when I was running my business while also going to school. It was, you know, weekends were for business, weekdays were for school. And so that meant pulling more than my fair share of all-nighters.
So I was doing a little research and I noticed that you published your first book in February 2014. And you published your first blog post for self-publishing school in March 2016. And one of the things I hear about is writers sometimes have to decide whether they continue blogging or if they exchange that time for writing their books. So has blogging affected your ability to write books?
Not so much, mostly just because I'm not going to put out a book for a little while. That's a strategic decision for me. But I will explain, because a lot of people think that they need to have a blog before they have a book. And I actually say no, and you really shouldn't. It's not necessary, at least. And I'll probably get a lot of flack for this, but I'm kind of anti-blog until you've already published a book. And so that's why, you know, we just had a landing page for self-publishing school, and I think I had published, gosh, at least I want to say four or five books by the time that we started a blog, because I think a blog is just a waste of time for most people. And unless you're good at SEO and you can get organic traffic, or unless you have an existing audience, for most people, I think it's a waste of time. Because yes, you can make an argument that you're honing in your voice and you're practicing. But I'm just such a bigger proponent to writing your book first and then using that book to drive traffic and then doing a blog. So I think it certainly can take away from your ability to write your first book, especially to answer to your question, can it affect your writing? Yes, for most people, I think it can. And we're to the point now where we have guest contributors and that sort of thing. And we're not publishing content at a rapid pace, because that's kind of a dead model. We're more focused on SEO. So publish, you know, either one post a week or one post a month, and then really focus on marketing and promoting that post so that we get some long-term value out of it.
That is an interesting analysis of blogging, because the main idea, like, for blogging that people think about is you got to blog as often as possible, write those 2,000-word blog posts that, you know, yeah. At this point, you might as well write a 5,000-word blog post, because the 2,000-worders, they're not even, like, standouts anymore. But, it's the blogging world, it just keeps changing and changing. But as long as you're writing and practicing, and I do like that idea of just coming out with the book right away, because it's such a bigger project, and I feel like you'll take it more seriously if you write a book versus if you write a blog post.
For sure. And then you'll make more money and you'll get more leads and more followers, subscribers, that sort of thing. And then guess what? You can break up and chunk up that book into multiple blog posts. So you can do that after the fact as well.
So some people listening to this episode will begin to realize that it's possible for them to publish their own books, but they might be confused with where exactly to start. I remember when I was thinking of like my first blog post, it wasn't that I couldn't think of ideas. It was just that so many ideas were in front of me and I didn't know which ones to pick. So how do you recommend picking the right topic for your book?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So, and I actually talk about this in my brand new book. It's called Published, The Proven Path from Blank Page to Published Author. And what I talk about in there is for people who have too many ideas, I recommend that you ask yourself these three questions. Okay. So the first question is, what's my fastest way to the finish line? Which one can I finish the fastest? Okay. So that's your first question. The second question is, which one am I most likely to finish? Okay, so maybe you're passionate about this topic, you know a lot about it or something like that. And then the third question is, which one's going to make me happy? Which book am I going to enjoy writing? And I encourage you to ask those questions in that order and weight those in order of importance in those three. So number one, what's my fastest to the finish line? So what do I have the most content on? And I could just quickly write this book because I have a lot of information on it. Second question is, which one am I most likely to finish? So meaning, not only can I start and get this going, but I can finish it because I'm passionate about this topic or it means something to me or something like that. And then thirdly, which one's going to make me happy? Which one am I going to really enjoy writing? And that's how I recommend that for people with too many ideas that you choose and finalize your book idea and which one to write first.
So people have all these different ideas, and to write their book, they eventually narrow it down to that one idea that they're going to choose. But once they have the idea, how exactly do you decide what to write next? Like for your book Published, there are so many different angles you could have taken. Why did you choose that particular approach? And what's basically the method that you use to decide what you write once you come up with the book's topic?
Yeah, so I teach a three-step process. So once you figure out your topic, there's a mind map, outline, write process that I teach. So the first step is the mind map. That's exactly what I did with my book, and that's exactly what I recommend for everyone do in their book. As you get out a piece of printer paper, it's a blank sheet of paper. You write your book idea in the center of the page. Then you brain dump onto the page everything you can think about that topic, every story you have, every lesson that you've learned, every book that you've read, everything. You take 15 to 45 minutes and just get it all out there. Then what you're going to do is you're going to move to step two and turn that mind map into an outline. This is very simple. So what you'll need to do here is you're going to take the common themes and ideas, groups of ideas that you have in that mind map, and you're going to group them into sections. You're going to form 4 to 7 sections. Okay, this is going to be the beginning of your outline for your book. So you got 4 to 7 sections. Then you're going to order those sections in the order that you would cover those topics in the book. Then you're going to drill into each of those sections, and you're going to drill down into chapters. So 2 to 3 chapters for each section. Now you've got as soon as you finish that, you've got a chapter by chapter roadmap for your book. Now that moves into step three, which is to write the dang thing, which is kind of a choose your own adventure. So there's two steps that you can take here. One is to type it out. Now, if you're going to do this, you repeat this three-step process that I just taught you, except on a chapter by chapter level. So you'll take chapter one, you'll spend 10 minutes mind mapping everything you know about that chapter. You'll spend 10 minutes turning that mind map into an outline, and then you'll spend 45 minutes writing that chapter out. That's one way to do it. Now, if you're like me and you speak better than you write, you can speak the book. So you do the same exact thing. You'll mind map an outline for each chapter, but then instead of typing it out, you'll spend 10 to 15 minutes speaking it out. You can use a transcription service like Rev.com or the Rev app, or Dragon Dictation, or there's a number of free transcription services out there as well. And you can get that text, or get actually what you spoke, turned into text. Then all you need is an editor to help you mold that into a finalized book.
I remember how you said that you like to do some of the editing yourself, and you like to have the draft in front of you. So for your books, do you like speak and they automatically get transcribed and that's how you create the first draft, or do you actually?
I do a little mix of both. I'll do so for my first couple books. I did the typing method, and then for some of my books since, I've done the transcription method, and then I've also I'll have a ghostwriter. So, which, you know, someone on my team, like I was mentioning earlier, and I'll have her, I'll speak stuff out. I'll give her videos. I'll give her PDFs, and we'll come up with an outline, and then she'll mold together a first draft. So, for example, if it's a story to start a chapter, I might tell the story in an audio, like a 3-minute audio, and then she'll start the chapter with that story, and she'll start by transcribing me first, and then she'll mold it to where it sounds more like the written word, and that's kind of the process that I've been doing for my last couple of books.
So the way I've seen the self-publishing space go, and I believe this is truly captured in an article I recently read on Thought Catalog from Ryan Holiday, he said that getting published is easy. Getting anyone to care, well, that's the hard part. With services like KDP and iAuthor making it really easy for us to publish our books, we now have to shift, like once we publish the book, into getting sales and getting people to care enough to become customers. So how do you get people to care enough about your books to end up reading them and possibly becoming returning customers?
That's a great question. So it all starts, good selling books start before the book is written. And it starts by getting very specific with the audience you're targeting and the topic that you're going to cover, and making sure, there's a saying that says it's easier to sell pain pills than it is to sell vitamins. So the premise is that you need to focus on the pain that you're solving, and that's going to do much better than trying to provide a vitamin solution, right? When it comes to pain pills, the drug companies don't have any problems selling those things, right? It's generic, you just repackage it, all that sort of thing. But when it comes to vitamins, you know, there's a bajillion types of vitamins. There's gummy vitamins, there's chewables, there's bear-shaped vitamins, there's star-shaped vitamins, there's vitamins for kids. It's like they're constantly repackaging them because it's really hard to sell. It's hard to sell vitamins, but it's easy to sell pain pills. So that's one of my biggest and first pieces of advice, is focus on a real pain and get very, very specific with that pain and the solution that you're going to be covering. And the second thing that I like to teach is, well, there's really three prongs to ongoing success in Amazon. One is reviews, so getting reviews, as many reviews as possible. Two is picking categories where people are looking and where people are searching for books. And then three is making sure that you pick good keywords. We've got a post on the SBS blog. I think it's called Three Steps to Take it's all about keywords when you're choosing your keywords and that sort of thing. We'll try to link that up in the show notes. But it's all about selecting good keywords. And a buddy of mine, Dave Chesson, he's really good at this sort of thing. And that's one of the secrets for ongoing success, is that you position yourself in the Amazon ecosystem for maximum success by making sure that you target specific keywords that people are searching, because that's how people are going to discover your book long term.
Getting people to discover your book is important for, as you teach in self-publishing school, building your credibility, generating revenue. But one challenge I see authors face is that they care about their work. They want people to care about their work, but then they feel like their work is never good enough. They feel like there's always that one flaw and their book is never going to be perfect. But we chase perfection, and it doesn't make sense since perfection is just this giant myth. So what is your advice on publishing a high-value book but not getting stressed out on perfection?
That's such a great question, because every author, every published author has dealt with this and persevered, right? My biggest tip is that editing will never be finished. So you have to do the best you can with what you have, but at a certain point, you have to put a stop to the madness, right? You just have to say, hey, enough is enough. I'm going to publish this book. So I recommend putting an end date for publishing. So say, hey, my rough draft's going to be complete by this date, and then editing is going to be complete by this date, and really sticking to that. Again, Parkinson's law, an object will swell in proportion to the amount of time or space you give yourself to complete it. So set firm and strict deadlines make sure that you adhere to those, because editing will never be finished. And I can promise you, the first time that you read your book, you're going to think it sucks. Everyone does. You're going to think it's not any good, but then you're going to push through that And you're going to find out that it's not so bad after all. And one of my favorite things, actually pulling this up on my computer right now, I have it on my desktop because it's just a constant reminder. But this guy, he says, he explains the creative process, and he says it's a six-step process. Step one, this is going to be awesome. Step two, this is hard. Step three, this is terrible. Step four, I'm terrible. Step five, hey, not bad. Step six, that was awesome. And I think every entrepreneur can relate to that in terms of their business, and every author can certainly relate to that in terms of their book.
I definitely see that connection with creating any form of content. And I'm happy you shared that lesson with us today and all the lessons you've shared with us throughout this episode. But when you think back on your journey from C-minus student to publishing best-selling books, like in the eyes of us, like a piece of cake, what is the best lesson that you have learned on your journey?
To fail. it's probably not what you're looking for, but just to fail. We have a core value at my company, Self Publishing School, which is fail forward, fail fast, fail often. And I think it's really, really important that you fail, that you put yourself out there, that you be willing to fail, because if you're willing to fail, then you can't actually fail. Because you won't see it as a failure. You'll see it as an opportunity to learn. I'm a firm believer that the only reason people fail is because they put failure on this pedestal. And when they fail, they think that they're a failure. But the people that I've found who are really successful, when they fail, they know that that's the beginning of a success. Now, Mark, you probably remember this from going through the program, but you know, we always talk about done is better than perfect, and how my finished book is better than the book you ain't got. Right? Just meaning that, hey, get that book out there, fail, and done is better than perfect.
I agree with that whole idea of done is better than perfect. And from a sales standpoint, I remember reading somewhere where the person who publishes his book, like in 6 months, it's not perfect, but it's good enough. It's going to get more sales than the person who takes like 2 years to publish a book on the same type of topic, because it's been in the marketplace longer and people have been able to engage with it. And I feel like the only way you can really improve is you could do stuff on your own, but when you release your work into the world and you hear people's feedback and you get different suggestions, that's how you really hone in and get better, by constantly releasing the work and not just producing work that never sees the light of day.
Completely agree. It's the whole lean startup model. Get an MVP, a minimum viable product, get it out there, get feedback, and you can always iterate and make the book better and release an updated and revised version.
One thing I like to ask every guest on my podcast is for an inspirational quote they can think of, because I want people to leave these episodes feeling empowered and ready to take action. So I ask you, Chandler, what is one awesome inspirational quote you can think of right now?
Yeah, so it's the Jim Rohn quote, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." And that may not be super inspirational, but it's a quote that's defined my life. It's why I created an entrepreneur house, and it's why I continue to move around the country and just always push to surround myself with smarter and smarter people. So that's what I would encourage other people to do as well.
You know, that's a quote that I've heard very often, and it's not like, rah, rah, go get them, but
yeah.
It's a quote that tells you how to live life in the most effective way possible. So I'm very happy you mentioned that inspirational quote within this episode.
Yeah, thanks, man.
So before we put this episode to a close, I want you to just let my listeners know where they can go and learn more about Self-Publishing School.
Yeah, so there's a couple of places that you can go. So you can go to self-publishingschool.com. That's the best place to go to find out more info. And then there's one particular post that I'll call out on the Self-Publishing School blog that I think people will find helpful, and it's how to self-publish a book in 2017. So we'll just make sure to link that up in the show notes. And that's just really, if you're looking to say, okay, Chandler, this has been great, but let's get some more meat and let's get some step-by-step. There's some videos that talk more about what I talked about and some more step-by-step instruction.
Chandler, it has been such a pleasure to have you on my podcast. All of those links mentioned will be in the show notes of this episode. I mean, it was such a pleasure. I've loved your program. I've loved having the chance to talk to you right now. So just thank you for being on the Breakthrough Success Podcast.
Mark, hey, man, thanks so much for having me. Always great to chat with fellow SPS people. And just thanks again for having me.
My pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. This interview is just a small sampling of the knowledge that Chandler has in store for us in self-publishing school. As an alum myself, I believe that this knowledge has the power to transform anyone who takes action on it. Regardless of your writing experience, there is a book lurking inside of you. For the next 1 to 2 days, I want you to get deep and think of a book topic that you can start writing about. Writing a book is a lot of fun and can potentially transform your life. That is not an exaggeration. If you forgot to take notes, then don't worry. We've got you covered with the show notes. Visit markgoberti.com/E25 for those. You can ask your questions over there, which I'll be more than happy to answer.